even absent our colleague, Senator Morissette, who I know is right behind me, I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 359 relating to the Oregon Advocacy Commission's office, and ask our professional staff from Legislative Fiscal to give us any opening comments, and then we have folks signed up for public testimony, and the sign-up sheet will stay out. I invite anyone who wishes to offer testimony to sign up, be able to come forward, and we'll not limit it to just who signed up here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 359 is a bill that establishes a new state agency, which would be the Oregon Advocacy Commission's office. And the functions of this agency would be to provide administrative and staff support to four advocacy commissions that already exist and have been established for some time. Those commissions are the Commission on Asian Affairs, the Commission on Black Affairs, the Commission on Hispanic Affairs, and the Commission for Women. This bill does not change the statutory functions of these four commissions and what they are charged with doing, but it does provide or establish the Oregon Advocacy Commission's office to staff the four commissions and essentially to take over their budget functions, in the sense that expenditures would now be through the new commission's office budget rather than through the four advocacy commissions themselves.
May I interrupt you just to ask a clarifying question? At one time, just by way of legislative history on this, there were the separate commissions that had executive directors, and some of them had staff, and some of them got by on fractions of staff. And then in our last budget crisis, they were given expenditure authority but no money. And at this point, I don't know who still has staff. So that's question number one. Question number two, then, is would the idea be to blend that existing staff into what appears to be an amalgamated back room? Same people?
Okay. To answer the first of your questions, which of the commissions still has staff and is still functioning, of these four commissions, only one has been able to retain staff, and that is the Commission for Women. The Commission for Women has staff that are financed from two separate sources, or two primary sources. One source is that the commission is the administrator of an AmeriCorps grant in Oregon, and they hire personnel in support of that administration. There is also, the Commission for Women also has hired an executive director whose responsibilities go beyond administration of the AmeriCorps grant and extend to the general administration of the Commission for Women's activities. Those activities or those expenses that are not financed through the AmeriCorps grant have been financed from donations that the Women's Commission has been generating. They have not been able to retain the executive director on a full-time basis because of funding shortfalls, but that position still exists. The other three commissions do not have any staff because they do not have funds in order to hire staff. Your second question is whether these positions would, or whether these individuals would transfer to the new commission. There is nothing in Senate Bill 359 that requires the Advocacy Commission's office to transfer the any of the executive director positions of the four commissions, whether they are now filled or vacant. It would transfer the employees that are working on the AmeriCorps grant to the new agency, but the commission office, the director of DAS under this bill will have authority to choose a director of the Advocacy Commission's office.
Thank you. Even with my interruption, is that your summary? Or?
That's pretty much the gist of this bill, with one major exception, and that is that we have asked Legislative Council to prepare some amendments that we will discuss when you feel that appropriate, let me note that one of the primary functions of these amendments are to actually put general fund appropriation and expenditure limitation, that is to say, to put the budget language into this bill. The governor introduced Senate Bill 359 and a separate budget bill for the Advocacy Commission's office. Because this bill, 359, is establishing a new activity, we are allowed to put the budget language directly into the bill, and we're recommending that you do that to keep everything together and to help reduce the Legislative Assembly's workload at this point in time.
Thank you. Any questions of the professional staff? Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had reduced funding for three of the four agencies, is that correct, in the 0305 budget general fund allocations?
In the 0305 budget, funding, general fund support was eliminated for all four of these advocacy commissions. I see you looking at the table on page 2 of my memo, this would be a good time to note that when you look at this table, the general fund represents the support that the state is providing to cover the administrative costs of these advocacy commissions, or, as is proposed in the 2005-07 columns, for the new advocacy commission office. The row that says other funds are in all cases funds that the commissions have generated themselves, either through donations or contracts or other activities. So there are no dedicated sources of monies in the other funds. In each case, the commissions had to go out and raise these funds. And in the 2003-05 biennium, only the Commission for Women was able to raise funds and remain active. But the state's decision in terms of funding treated all four equivalently and eliminated general fund support for all four commissions. This was done actually before the end of the 01-03 biennium. So the general fund was eliminated toward the end of the 01-03 biennium, last session, when the state was trying to rebalance the 01-03 biennium budget.
Follow-up,
thank you. I see, Steve, that in the 0305 estimated column, that's what you're anticipating will be the fiscal year end accounting, which is $891,000, which is slightly more than half of the legislatively approved. And then we move forward other funds in the 0507, it would be this recommendation of $184,000. Why such a dramatic reduction?
The reason for the dramatic reduction is if you look at the 0305 estimated number or total other funds of $891,377, almost in their entirety, those represent expenditures of the Commission for Women. The other commissions had only marginal expenditures at all during the 0305 biennium. Of the $891,000, roughly, most of those expenditures, and I'm afraid I don't have the number here with me right now, perhaps someone else in the room does, but most of those expenditures represent funds that the commission is expending in its administration of the AmeriCorps grant. The AmeriCorps grant is scheduled to expire at the end of August of this coming year. So in the 05-07 biennium, there are not many AmeriCorps funds left, and that's why you see the dramatic decline. It is possible that this grant could be renewed. It's uncertain at this point if it were to be renewed, whether it would be renewed through the Commission for Women or somewhere else. But this is basically what you're seeing is the sunset of a federal grant in the 0507 biennium.
Any other questions for the professional staff?
Madam Chair, in thinking of past legislative action and then restoring in this session, it'd be helpful if someone could make a case statement as to why we're doing this. If there's someone that could do that.
I think that we have witnesses that may be able to do that, and that would be a perfect segue into, even though I'm taking the list out of order, inviting Representative Tomei to come forward. I think you're absent from the floor, not only here as a state representative, but also as a board member for the, or a commission member for the Commission on Women. So would you please come forward?
Good afternoon, senators and staff. Thank you very much for allowing me to appear here today. And there are people who can answer your question, Senator, much better than I can. For the record, I am State Representative Carolyn Tomei, representing House District 41, encompassing the city of Milwaukee and parts of Southeast Portland. I'm also speaking today as the legislative representative of the Oregon Commission of Women and as a co-chair of the Oregon Women's Health and Wellness Alliance. I'm testifying in support of Senate Bill 359, a bill that provides funding for invaluable resources in our state. With this legislation, we will be able to sustain four advocacy groups, the Commission for Women, the Commission on Asian Affairs, the Commission on Hispanic Affairs, and the Commission on Black Affairs. These commissions illustrate our recognition of the importance of having the voices of women and people of color at the table in our state government. The advocacy commissions complement the actions of legislators as they work to represent all Oregonians. The commissions present legislators with the specific concerns of their respective populations so that their needs may be addressed by our state government. Unfortunately, in 2002, the state funding for all of these commissions was eliminated, as you've heard. The only commission that was able to find independent funding to remain active was the Commission for Women. Now, if we do not fund these organizations, we will also lose the Commission for Women and will continue to feel the loss of the Asian, Hispanic, and Black commissions. I appreciate consideration on this important legislation. I hope you will choose to support this bill and send the message that we as legislators truly care accurately representing the needs of our citizens in this great process. Thank you. You will be hearing from people from the AmeriCorps and for the Commission for Women and hopefully for the other minority commissions. I just want to make clear to you that through the AmeriCorps, which has been overseen by the Commission for Women, we've brought over $1 million of federal funding through the AmeriCorps. And you'll be hearing more about those facts and figures after I speak. But it has been a tremendous asset to the state, which we will lose if we lose the Commission for Women.
Thank you very much for your testimony. As a commission member, are you reapplying for the AmeriCorps grant, or does that opportunity exist to reapply?
It's close to the deadline, Senator, and I'm not sure. I think that Roslyn and other people from the AmeriCorps can answer that better than I.
The other comment that you made, and again, if you want to defer to Ms. Farrington, I'm perfectly happy to do that, but absent the AmeriCorps grant, is there enough energy behind your very aggressive fundraising to be able to sustain the commission at any level?
I think it would be very difficult. This, I'm supposed to say thank you, Chair, for the question. I forget all those niceties. I haven't been in committee for a few weeks. Thank you, Chair Johnson. It is very difficult. We're very close to losing Roslyn as our executive assistant, and without paid staff, it is very difficult for volunteers who are mostly women who are working full-time to continue the activities. We are planning the Women of Achievement Dinner, which does bring in funds, but as you know, without paid staff, it is just extremely difficult to continue those activities.
Any other questions for Representative Tomei? Thank you very much for coming, and you'll be pleased to know across the Senate floor today we confirmed an excellent addition to your commission, Ellie McPeak.
Oh, wonderful.
And I think that you will find her to be an energetic and excellent addition to the commission, and I wish you the best.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Thank you, committee members.
Thank you very much. All right, we'll go back now to the regular order and invite up Roslyn Farrington. I see some gesturing in the back that suggests maybe Ms. Parton would like to come up first.
And Satish.
And Satish.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of documents here just so we all know what we're looking at. Copies for each of you, and then I have copies of just the governor's budget pages for everybody else, too. For the record, my name is Lynn Parton. I'm here on behalf of the governor's office. It's the governor's bill. It's part of his recommended budget.
Thank you.
Senate Bill 359 is part of a package of three bills, which I've provided you copies of. It's a little bit confusing. Senate Bill 359 is the one officially in front of us here. House Bill 2013 is not in front of us, but I wanted to bring it up because it represents an effort by Representative Lim to be of help as well, and I wanted to acknowledge his efforts in that direction. He had a bill that was completely different than this. It has now been gutted and stuff, totally with his permission, to echo exactly the language of Senate Bill 359, which is the governor's bill, other than the relating clause, which is slightly different. As you've already heard, Senate Bill 5502 is the funding mechanism, originally was a Ways and Means bill. That has not had a hearing yet. Each of the other two bills had extensive hearings over an hour and a half in the Senate and the House substantive committees before being referred to Ways and Means and then eventually to their budget committees. I'm going to leave it to the experts to talk more in more detail about why all of these agencies deserve saving. But I do want to emphasize that this is the only game in town. There's no other bill out there. There's no other vehicle out there. This is about extinction or existence for these agencies that have done a lot of fine work. And I think I'll let Satish talk about the fiscal side of things, and then if we can have some of the people come up from the commissions, I think they'll be able to tell you why they deserve saving. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Satish.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee. This is Satish Upadhyay with the Department of Administrative Services, and I can talk to you about what's in the governor's budget, the same presentations that you've heard for other agencies. So if you'll turn to my presentation handout on page 2, you will see that the Oregon Advocacy Commission's office, which is a newly created state agency, its budget is pretty tiny, a little over $459,000 of total funds, and of which around $375,000 is general funds. So it's a very small budget. If we'll turn to page 3, you will see that general fund is about 82% of the budget. The remaining 18% comes from other funds, and the other funds will be coming from grants and donations. Moving along to page 4.
Let me stop and ask you, the 18% that you have identified from other funds, right now it's my understanding that the Commission on Women is the only one of the commissions that is generating any donations. How can you be certain of this 18% based on past track record of last year and looking forward optimistically to who can raise what, how?
And Madam Chair, what this $84,000 is almost entirely, this is entirely for the Commission for Women. And the Commission for Women right now is the program administrator for this AmeriCorps program, Communities in Partnership to Stop Violence Against Women and Children. And this program, the AmeriCorps program here, is until August 31st of 2005. So what the other funds you see, around $78,000 of the $84,000 relates to that AmeriCorps program. What's happened in the past is whenever there's been an extension of the AmeriCorps grant, the agencies come before the emergency board to get additional limitation.
But now we're in kind of a catch-22, it seems like, if I understand this correctly, and maybe Ms. Farrington would be the better person to ask. You can't apply for the grant without the existence of the commission, and the commission, the existence of the commission is uncertain without the passage of this bill. Do I have that correctly?
Madam Chair, Chair, yes, you have it correctly. And in fact, what's happening is the AmeriCorps people are looking to see if there's some other state agency that would house this program.
Okay.
So there are some ongoing discussions going on that, and once something is finalized, I think we'd come before the legislature if you all have not gone home yet, otherwise we'd come before the emergency.
Anytime before Christmas, Satish will still be here. So
then we'll be here before that.
Please continue. I apologize for the interruption.
No problem. The other thing is that the expenditure categories, we are on page 4. Personal services is 58% of the budget. Services and supplies is 30% of the budget, and the special payments is 12% of the budget. Basically, what's happening is the general fund you see, that's on page 5, the $375,000. It pays for two staff positions for the four positions, for the four commissions, and also basic services and supplies so they can be in business. The other funds, again, as I stated earlier, it's for the AmeriCorps program until the end of August. And there'll be four positions, 2.26 full-time FTE. The 0.26 FTE is for the AmeriCorps program to be there until August 31st. And the two FTE, it's four positions, but two FTE. So. Now, moving on to the last page, the major policy issues. This is a new state agency. I think the governor wanted to come up with something that would be able to allow these commissions to be in business in an effective and efficient way in the current budget environment. So that's what's happening here. There are two staff positions and essential office expenses provided the general fund. And it also provides for funding for the AmeriCorps program until August 31st.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Pacha? Senator Morse.
I'm not sure who to direct this to, but what thought was given to taking representation from the four commissions and just having one advocacy commission instead of maintaining the four, but still with the same mission to represent the exact constituents of the existing four commissions?
Chair Johnson, Senator Morse, if I may respond to that, my understanding is there was a discussion exactly along those lines, and one of the concerns was how politically charged that could become, given ballot measure 36 and some other things that were going on at the time. And so we wanted to have something that we could actually get out of this legislature, and there was a calculation made as to what might be in the realm of the possible.
I guess Madam Chair, I don't understand the nexus between 36 and
commissions. if you have a human rights commission, then there would be various different views that various different people would have about who should and should not be included in such a human rights commission. And and some people would be resistant to including, for instance, gay and lesbian, transgender, so forth. And that would seem to be an obvious group of people to include in an overall human rights commission.
I guess I'm sure I'm
Follow up, Senator Morse.
Senator Morse said it before me. No, go ahead, please.
We'll come back to the human rights question.
Oh. Okay. What's the existing coordination between among the commissions, or is there one? Now, the Women's Commission, I understand, is housed in Portland. The other three commissions are housed where?
Chair Johnson, Senator Morris said, other people can speak to that better than I can, but it is my understanding that the Commission for Women is the only one who's been housed anywhere of late. The others had to give up even their file cabinets and give all of their services and supplies back to DAS, as I understand it, and basically have their archives in people's basements.
How will the other three commissions benefit under this bill?
Chair Johnson, Senator Morris said currently they are financially defunct. They're not going to be able to carry on functions without some kind of funding. This will put them way ahead of where they are now. And the Commission for Women is the only one that has the ability to sustain itself at this point, and none of the other ones have. So three of those people are going to be way ahead, and the Commission for Women will also be ahead.
One
more follow-up, Senator Morse.
Will they have a staff person, or currently have a staff?
Chair Johnson, Senator Morris, three of the commissions have no paid staff. The only one that has paid staff is Commission for Women, and that's part-time. That's not a full-time FTE because they weren't able to sustain that. There will be staff provided. That's the point of having the office, is that there will be multiple staff that will be shared across the commissions, but they will have support staff. The idea of the office structurally is that all the board members, that the individual advocacy commissions will retain their separate board members, their statutory functions, et cetera, but they will have this overall support to share, which will put them ahead of where they are now.
I think the easiest way to think of it, and correct me if I'm wrong, Ms. Parton, is a combined back room. So there'd be single point of accounting, single point of gift receipting, single point of interaction with DAS, and yet you would have up front at the counter level, very distinct, the Commission for Women would have their staff, their board, Asian would have their board, so there would still be to the face of the casual observer, there would still be that door that you would enter for those issue areas, whether it's Hispanic, Black, Women, Asian, but combined back room to try to efficiently deal with the administrative tasks that each of the commissions was being asked to discharge individually.
Very well put, Chair.
Okay,
Johnson.
Now, Mr. Bender had a comment, and then we'll go back and follow the line of questioning that Senator Moore started.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to comment when Mr. Apadia was going through his presentation. His table in page 5 looks different than my table on page 2. And that is just because there isn't really discrepancy here. He is showing the formal budget for the Oregon Advocacy Commission's office, which, of course, does not exist yet. So in past biennia, there are no expenditures there. In the table that I've placed here, just for comparative purposes, I've just combined the four individual advocacy commissions' budgets so that you could get a more historical viewpoint of what funding would look like. When the advocacy commission budgets did receive general fund back in the 2001-03 biennium, in that case, the amount of support was to provide staff, four staff persons, one for each of the four commissions. Under this proposal, there would be two staff persons funded from general fund to serve all four commissions. There's therefore less support for personal services. However, the governor's recommendation includes significantly more support for services and supplies than was available previously.
Thank you. Now, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I can understand the issue surrounding Measure 36. I still don't see the nexus to the four commissions that are specifically listed, none of which include Measure 36 issues.
Chair Johnson, Senator Morse, what I was trying to explain is it's easier to keep something that you've got or had than it is to branch out, especially in I guess you could say, politically treacherous waters, because there are some people that would not want to see a lot of other minorities involved in the human services, rights commission we thought that would be a politically tougher sell than trying to keep what we already had.
Maybe what's confusing all of us is that I'm not sure where in this bill it speaks to a human rights commission so much as it speaks to the individual identities that already exist, Black, women, Hispanic, and Asian.
Right.
And that's certainly what's confusing to me, because that's what I thought we were here discussing, is finding funding again for those four advocacy agencies.
Chair Johnson and Senator Morse, maybe I misunderstood the question. I thought that the question was, why not just go to a broader umbrella that would not just include the minorities already included, or in the case of the Commission for Women, majority actually, that would not just include these groups but might include other groups. And so we were trying to stick with the ones that we had, because that was something that people were already used to.
But that was not my question, Madam Chair.
Oh.
It's just if you could accomplish
greater efficiencies by having one commission representing four groups. But that's a fine point, I guess.
Chair Johnson and Senator Morse, and that certainly was that is certainly another avenue that could have been pursued. I think that it's important to each of these commissions to be able to have some autonomy, and they have had different emphases in what they've done. Well, I can let them talk more specifically about their exact efforts, but I think that there's some feeling that this is already half a loaf because they're already going to have to share support staff when in the olden days they had their own executive directors and so forth. So this is sort of a, you know, splitting the baby or whatever kind of approach, as opposed to taking away all the autonomy or giving them all the autonomy and all the funding.
All right. Anything else, Ms. Parton?
No, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Now we'll go back to the order of the sign-up, and I want to renew for people that came in after the hearing started that I took off one page of the sign-up sheet. We'll make sure that there's a sign-up sheet so that people who came in after the hearing started can also have the opportunity to testify. Ms. Farrington? And anybody you'd like to bring with?
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Ms. Suzuki and Ms. Farrington.
Good afternoon, Chair Johnson and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Rosalind Farrington. I'm the current executive director of the Oregon Commission for Women, and I'm happy to be here before you today to testify on behalf of this bill and talk to you about the work of the Commission for Women. I've been with the Commission for Women for 5.5 years now, and it's been an act of love and an act of really being committed to advocating for women in Oregon. And I think all you have to do is come and spend a week in our office and listen to the phone calls we get every day from women across the state who are looking for support, who are looking for the ability to access systems, to see how necessary the Oregon Commission for Women and the other advocacy commissions still is. And I will talk a little bit. I gave you a handout, which is my 2005 legislative report, which talks about what we've been doing over the last 2 years. Effectively, we lost our state funding on April 1st of 2004. And it was 2004, no, 2003, excuse me. And since then, we've been have been aggressive about fundraising in order to keep the work of the Commission for Women going. The good news is the Commission for Women, my commission is fully staffed, so I still have all 11 of my commissioners, which is not true for some of the other advocacy commissions. And, you know, to speak to Senator Johnson, Senator Morris, to speak to part of your question of why not just have one small commission, we're committed to being ethnically and regionally diverse with the Commission for Women. So we're committed to having commissioners from all over the state. We're committed to having commissioners from all different ethnicities to represent, to really broadly represent women. And we also have Senator Devlin on our commission.
I saw him poke his head in here. I think he's bouncing back and forth between two committees, but he put his head in. So
thank you. So he represents, you know, a male on our commission. But so if we were to get down to a smaller commission and only had three slots for the Commission for Women, that would really limit our ability to really hear the diverse voices of women here in Oregon. So that's part of the reason that we like the model of each commission still having their own commissions.
If you don't mind, Ms. Farrington, we'll interrupt for questions. Is that Senator Morset?
Do the commissions have joint meetings ever?
Senator Johnson, Senator Morissette, we haven't, in the last couple of years, when I first started with the commission, there was an attempt. They used to, about once a year, they used to have joint meetings. But I don't think they do that anymore. Over the last 2 years, since everybody's been defunded, I've been meeting with the chairs of the other commission on a regular basis as we try to figure out how to keep the commissions alive and keep the work of the commissions going. So since then, we've had more you know, Synergy, because their chairs are still around, so I've been meeting with them.
Follow-up, Senator Morissette.
Well, it just seems to me that the commission, in general, the commissions would benefit from interaction. You have members who are women on all of the other commissions, and you're all dealing with basically the same area, and I just think it would be beneficial, and I'm not saying that you're not already doing it, I mean, but you're the group with the most power, in a sense, and I think your support of the other commissions would probably be beneficial to them, so, for what it's worth.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Senator Morissette, I agree completely, and we have worked diligently to support one another throughout. I mean, Carol Suzuki and I have been, like, joined at the hip for the last couple of years, but we really have, and before that, when the commissions had executive directors, we really did work hard to try and come together. But you had one commission who had an executive director who was out sick for a while, and you had another commission who had an executive director who had, you know, a different relationship with his commission, so that makes it harder. I think the beauty of this is, of this new organization, is you have one executive director who's going to be linked to all of the commissions in some way, shape, or form, and that's going to provide some sort of synergy that has been a little bit lacking in the past. So to continue on my presentation, I just want to turn to page, I'd like you to please turn to page 8 of the handout that I gave you, and it talks about the Commission for Women since the 2003 defunding. And I just want to highlight a few things on this and then really spend more time answering any questions you might have about the work of the Commission for Women. So during the 2001-03 biennium, for every dollar of state funding we received, we raised $6 in federal and local community dollars. And I like to refer to the Commission for Women as an example of what's right in state government. Because, you know, you guys talk about performance measures, you talk about this and that, and every performance measure that the Commission for Women has ever had since I've been there, we've either met or exceeded. You know, you talk about leveraging state dollars, and we do that with federal and local and community money. Our AmeriCorps members are, we have 25 AmeriCorps members who are out there in about 15 cities. So our AmeriCorps members are all around the state. We've had a couple at Legal Aid in Albany. We've had a couple in Eugene at the university and other agencies around the state where they're out there providing services at minimal cost to the state. In 2000, when I started with the commission, we had one staff person, that was me. Today we have three paid staff people and one AmeriCorps member. And also in 2000, you know, the commission was already doing its Women of Achievement Awards dinner, which brings in probably close to $40,000 over the biennium, but we didn't have any direct donor commitments. And today we have over 400 people who are committed donors to the Commission for Women. So the Commission for Women really has been responding to a legislative mandate to form outside partnerships and to sort of get a donor base going to support the work that we're doing. What we've lost is we do a quarterly newsletter that started out going to 300 people, but now goes to over 4,000 people. And we haven't been able to publish that because we don't have the funding for it or the resource for it. Plus, for the last year, I've been at three-quarter time, so I've been working about 30 hours a week, so that also some of the stuff that has to go. The Commission for Women has been committed to traveling around the state and providing women's health and wellness seminars and financial wellness seminars during non-legislative years. And those have also been put on hold. And the reason we do that is because the bulk of calls that we were getting in the office were people who wanted to, women who wanted to go back to school, who wanted to start their own business, who were having some sort of either financial or health problem. And in response to that, we started doing these seminars around the state. So we would go to Eugene and invite 5,000 women, and about 400 would show up, and we give them information on, you know, what are the questions you need to be asking your doctor when you go see your doctor. And we'd also, with the financial wellness seminars, we would have people come in and say, I started my own business, this is how I did it. We traveled with his treasurer, Randall Edwards, and he talked about the state economy, and he talked about the Oregon savings plan that they had. So we really were providing women with information that was going to help enhance their lives.
Ms. Farrington, a question that at least two of us have heard on other committees. If I were a black female entrepreneur and I was interested in getting help from the state in setting up a new business, where would you refer me?
I would refer you to the governor's office on for minority and emerging small businesses.
The reason that I ask was that we discussed in another committee and a little bit in this one the presence of so many pockets of that same service spread out over all sorts of different state agencies. ODOT has small emerging and minority. OECDD has small emerging and minority. The governor's office has small emerging and minority. And I was just curious where somebody who's on the telephone with somebody seeking help on the other end, who is your go-to place? And
yes.
You just answered it by saying that you would generally refer to the governor's office.
Yes.
Because we were simply trying to figure out why do we have all this duplication. And if, in fact, I were a woman of color and attempting to start my own entrepreneurial activity, I wouldn't know who to call.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that was my curiosity.
Yeah, that's, Madam Chair and members of the committee. And we also refer them to the Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs and the Women Entrepreneurs of Oregon. So we refer, you know, we give them a letter with contact information for all of those folks so they can figure out what's best, what would be the best fit for them.
Cool. Thanks.
The other thing that I want to talk about that's been lost since we've lost our funding is the public focus meetings. Now, back in the early 70s, the Commission for Women was the first group that traveled around the state and listened to the voices for women about what was happening to them around violence in their community and how the state and the local systems were responding when they were trying to escape violence. Since that time, we've gone around the state, and we still continue to do our public focus meetings on child care, on women in the law, on teen pregnancy. And we use that information to have the experts come in and talk to us about what's happening in that around the state, and then we'd have local women come from their community to talk about their lives and what's really important to them. And after those public focus meetings, we publish a report that we send out to the governor, we send to the members of the legislature, we also send out to news media folks, so we could provide that sort of information. And I think that is, in many ways, the heart of what's been lost. Because if you wanted information on women's employment and women's health issues, you know, basic information to help you make a more informed decision as a legislator, there's really not one place to go for that. And I think that's sort of the crush of what's been lost with the Commission for Women with our loss of funding. But we are a determined bunch at the Commission for Women. My model since 2003 has been women will prevail, and we keep doing the work we're doing. You know, by whatever means necessary in order to keep this agency going, because the work is really so very important, and it really does have a positive impact on the lives of women in Oregon. And I think as a state, that's our responsibility. So that.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Ms. Farrington? Senator Morissette.
I noticed in your 203 report you sold 390 tickets, and in the 04 you sold 277. What do you attribute the drop in attendance?
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, for the 2003 Women of Achievement Awards dinner, we had state agencies had bought some tables during that year as a way to honor women in their agencies who were doing good works. And we sold about 5 tables to state agencies. Well, after that dinner, there was some mandate that went out that says state agencies couldn't buy tables anymore. So that dropped. And also there's another large group that had their dinner the same night we had it. And we had many legislators, including our chair, going back and forth to the dinner. And
just
so,
a way to get 2 meals.
Right. But that also affected, because it was in the same building but in different rooms, that also affected our numbers as well. But I think 2003 was an outstanding year, and I think we can count on about 300 is a good place where we float around for the Women Achievement Awards Dinner.
Thank you. It's an excellent event. Any other questions for Ms. Farrington? Thanks very much. Ms. Suzuki.
Hello, Chair Johnson and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 359. For the record, my name is Carol Suzuki, and I am chair of the Oregon Commission on Asian Affairs. The Commission on Asian Affairs became a statutory commission in 1995, and over the years it's faced many budgetary challenges while doing its best to establish itself as a resource for the Asian American community and state government. Each advocacy commission is the product of enormous community effort just to be before you today. As an advocacy commission for the Asians in Oregon, we serve a very diverse population. I think when most people think about Asian Americans, they think about, you know, Chinese or Koreans, Japanese, but we represent well over 40 ethnic minority groups, and we also represent Middle Eastern ethnic groups such as Syrians, Iranians, and many more. And the most recent census data has shown that Asian Americans now make up 3.2% of Oregon's population. And while that percentage may seem small on paper, it actually represents over 100,000 people statewide. When we were still active as a commission, the commission served as the first point of contact for many Asians. Over the years, we have referred numerous people to state and federal agencies after receiving the initial contact, and have organized such things as the Asian Heritage Celebration at Pioneer Courthouse Square, an Asian American home buying fair, a joint meeting with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and Asian American business owners, an outreach meeting in Medford, and heard concerns regarding assisted living facilities, and various other outreach activities. Most of those activities stopped when we were forced to close our door and surplus all commission furniture and possessions in early 2003. And as I was elected chair in late 2002, so basically during my tenure as chair, I've done my best to hold the commission together. We had a situation where in April of 2003, we had to lay off our executive director. And so much of the administrative duties fell upon myself as chair. And so I was in the position of working here in state government and in the legislature. And so in that sense, I could keep an eye on things. And I'm fortunate enough to work in an office where, you know, I can receive emails and periodically check emails for the commission, for commission work. But what's out there on the website is my home number, phone number, and I return phone calls in the evenings. A lot of times they're questions for referrals to state agencies. Most recently, I had Department of Human Services gave me a call and was asking me for contacts within the Laotian community for someone was out sick in terms of giving translation services, and they're asking me for contacts, and so I returned the call, and I'm hoping that the folks that I referred them to were able to help them. But you know, it has been difficult to try to maintain an agency once you've lost pretty much everything that the agency once did. So in the meantime, the other thing that's happened is we've lost commission members, partly because their terms came and went, basically. There were some folks that were on the commission from Medford and Roseburg. We had no money to reimburse folks for their time, meaning their mileage. And there are many members that would choose not to receive that reimbursement because they were dedicated. But more and more, as the future of the commissions were kind of getting trickier, I mean, they just had to go on to other things. And so it's also been difficult to obviously recruit members to the commission, particularly when we knew so much was uncertain for the commissions. And so the commissions are made up of volunteers, and there are people like myself who want to volunteer their time to assist government in achieving its diversity goals in employment and in minority recruitment, and those needs are still very much out there. And so, you know, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. Any questions from Ms. Suzuki? Senator Morissette.
Carol, if we pass this budget as presented to us, how will this benefit your committee?
Senator Morissette and members of the commission, of the committee, excuse me. I think it would be helpful in that right now we don't have an executive director. This would give us an administrative office to help us with all those things that, in terms of putting the meetings together, to getting public notice out, it would take off of me as chair the administrative duties that I have adopted, whether it's giving notice to the governor's office or Rosalind, I'm sure, could go into a long list of things that she does as the executive director, all those things off of our shoulders so that commission members could focus on doing the work that they were appointed to do, which is to advocate on behalf of their communities. And I think it's a compromise. I mean, ideally, it would be best to have each commission having their own executive director, but as Lynn Parton mentioned, this is the only game in town, and we're supportive of this concept of a basically an umbrella agency, which allows the commissions to keep their commissions intact and have full commissions. To respond to Senator Morris's question about a combined commission, for example, I spoke about the diversity of the Asian American community. It would be very difficult to choose, you know, do you go with a more established community like the Chinese community, or do you go with a member of the Laotian community? I mean, there's certain difficulties, I guess, there, and as well as language barriers. And what we've been trying to do with our appointments is to have people that are not only ethnically diverse, but also regionally from different parts of the state.
Questions for Ms. Suzuki?
Thank you both very much for coming, and thank you for your almost heroic efforts to keep the commissions alive. Ms. Suzuki working on her free time, and Rosalind not knowing whether or not you have a job from one session to the next. I'm very respectful of your cheerful good nature every time I see you working in some pretty adverse circumstances, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to struggle with the handwriting. Eduardo? Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
If you could state your name for the record and spell your last name, please.
Yes, for the record, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Eduardo Angulo. I'm the chairman of the Salem Kaiser Coalition for Equality. We are a multi-ethnic, multicultural coalition based here in Salem. We have organizations like the Salem Kaiser, NAACP, Mano a Mano Family Center, Latinos Unidos Siempre, our youth organization. We have Willamette University, Mecha students. We have, trying to remember all the organizations, the Bilingual and Migrant Parents Association, PECUN, our Farm Workers Union, CAUSA, the Pro-Immigrant Rights Coalition of Oregon, and I am here today to speak on behalf of Senate Bill 351. Many years ago, I was a volunteer for the Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs. In that capacity, I organized the 2000 Latino Youth Summit. It was a very hard endeavor, but one that was extremely rewarding. The fact that we were able to engage with school districts throughout Oregon, community organizations, business, state agencies, to put together this with the help of the University of Oregon, we put together this two-day youth summit at the University of Oregon, where we brought over 250 Latino youth from all around the state. Many of us talk about the achievement gap. Many of us talk about what is happening with our minority students. I can tell you that when the Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs was operational, it was serving a great need throughout Oregon. It had a huge emphasis on education, on working on issues of how to address the achievement gap. And since we had the commission defunded, we're finding ourselves that there is nobody out there in the communities throughout Oregon to advocate to help our school districts deal in a better way with closing the achievement gap. And I will speak to the issue of education, because I think that that's one of the most pressing issues in our state of Oregon. Not just to say that in general all the commissions represent over 500,000 Oregonians of all ethnic and racial backgrounds that do not have, for the most part, representation, do not have a way, a conduit, an organization, a commission that transfer their needs to our legislators. Basically, the minority community of Oregon is, for the most part, shut out of our legislative process. So I encourage you, all of you, senators, to please consider Senate Bill 351. It's like some of the previous people that spoke, it's the only game in town. We really would like to have something more that will speak to the respect that our legislature had for our minority communities. But we know that we are in difficult times in Oregon, and this is, you know, the only game in town. So I am in full support of Senate Bill 351.
Thank you very much. Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Eduardo, what happened to... Okay, you were a statewide commission.
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, I was a volunteer at the office here in Salem.
My question, though, is, are there... is this the only remnant of the statewide commission? Are you, do you have connections in Portland, Eugene, with Central Latino?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, said I was not one of the commissioners, had never been, but I serve at the discretion of the 12 commissioners that we had throughout all the regions in the state of Oregon. For what I understand, to answer your question, Senator, is that they have not met for several months as a commission. I know that the chairperson, Francisca Leyva Johnson, she's out of Eugene, one of the commissioners of the Human Rights Commission at Eugene, have been working very hard, and I think that Rosalind and Carl spoke to the fact that they have been with some of the staff members of the governor working very diligently for the past 2 years to try to get our commissions back in function. And I don't know if that answered your question, Senator.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for the opportunity, Senator.
I would now invite Mr. Wong, Philip Kennedy Wong, to come forward. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Philip Kennedy Wong, EMO, Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. And I want to thank you very much for having the opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 359. I just want to briefly state what EMO's mission is and why we support Senate Bill 359. Our mission is quite simple. It's a unity of all of God's people, and the work of the Advocacy Commission, obviously, is to help integrate people into our state and into, obviously, our society to be able to achieve the American dream. The religious community has always served underserved populations, whether they be newly arrived immigrants, people of color, or, you know, back during the 50s, the civil rights movement. Churches have always been on the forefront of trying to fully integrate all people into our society. We recognize that one of the roles that the Advocacy Commissions play is recognizing the systems that we have in place that may make it difficult for all people to be fully integrated. And if you look at the mission of the Advocacy Commissions, it's to look at the economic, political, and social systems that we have in place. And, for example, I sit on the Hunger Relief Task Force, which is a statewide task force. And we serve as the voice for Oregon's hungry, which don't necessarily always have a voice within the legislative process. And I can tell you the benefit from sitting on that task force and being able to identify things that we need to change, whether it's the WIC's Farmers Market or the Summer Food Program. You know, the same sort of need exists for underserved populations. So with that, we wholeheartedly support Senate Bill 359, and thank you again.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Kennedy Wong? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I would now like to ask Everett Rice to come forward. He's the former executive director of one of the commissions and a commissioner, too, as well, Mr. Rice.
Yes, that is correct. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Senators. It is an honor and pleasure to be before you once again. Madam Chair stated, I am a former executive director of the Oregon Commission on Black Affairs. About a year after we lost funding, Governor Kulongoski was nice enough to appoint me as a commissioner to the Commission on Black Affairs. And it's been my honor to serve as a volunteer on the commission. Being for the last 2.5 years before we lost our funding, I served as the executive director. Our executive director, Ms. Farrington, mentioned that the Herculean efforts that Carol Suzuki and Rosalind Farrington made to get our commissions to work cooperatively. We're making good progress on that, and I came down with cancer and was out on disability leave for several times during that time period. That caused some problems in coordinating our commissions, but thank God I'm doing much better now. I'm able to work. But I'm here to support and ask for your support on Senate Bill 359A. One of the things that I can say as a commissioner and I couldn't say as an executive director is that I think one of the best told stories in the state of Oregon is the stories of the ethnic and racial commissions, that the work that they do behind the scenes, the work that they do in silence, and what do they do without very much credit. I think that Rosalind Farrington, the executive director of the Women's Commission, has done just an outstanding job on funding her commission. The other commissions worked hard to follow her example, but we ran into roadblocks and we all weren't able to. But we have that wonderful example of her commission and the Women's Commission and the great work that they do. I would ask that members of the committee that you get to know these commissions. For there are many things that the commissioners of the commissions on Black Affairs, Asian, Women's, and Hispanic Affairs do that are not very heralded. For instance, I'll relate a few things that our commission has been doing in the interim as volunteers. excuse me, I'm a little hoarse today. As volunteers. As the former executive director, I was called in to mediate a labor dispute, which was a very unusual task for me, but we were very glad to do it between employees of the United States Postal Service and the United States Postal Service. We are still in the process of doing that, and we are working on that. And thank you so much, Senator. Thank you so much, Madam Chairman. Excuse me. We have been kind of mediating a dispute between U.S. Postal Service employees and the United States Postal Service. They asked us, the Commission on Black Affairs, to come in as independent observers and independent, not negotiators, so to speak, in the legal sense, but negotiators to be independent observers as to discussions that were going on between union officials, between the United States Postal Service, and between the employees who were disgruntled with some situations that existed, not only in the city of Eugene, but in the city of Portland, and some here in the city of Salem. There have also been many calls. There's not a day. I'm very fortunate in that when we lost our funding and all the executive directors were laid off, that I was fortunate enough to where I had enough seniority with the state of Oregon that a former agency that I had the privilege of working for called me back, and I'm in service with the Department of Human Services. I'm very fortunate in that this is a very flexible agency, and that my immediate administrator, my manager, is very amenable to my work with the commission. When you look up the commission's website, you will see that's my telephone number and my office there in Portland, Oregon. And there's not a day that I did not receive two or three calls in relation to issues having to do with discrimination, with fairness, with how do I get in contact with this agency within state government. So we are very busy, even though it's behind the scenes. And I think that one of the major faults I would look at all the commissions is we have not accurately told our stories over the years. I tell people that I came from the Deep South, from the state of Arkansas, and I can tell you that these agencies and the things that these agencies have been able to accomplish have been phenomenal with very little resources, and that we've made a difference whether Oregonians know about it or not. It's just that we haven't been very good at telling the story of how successful we have been, how that we've affected the lives of people of color and women here in the state of Oregon. And I'm one of those that, as a commissioner now, I can tell that story a little bit better. I have personally, over the last 2.5 years, I've spoken to over 60 churches, mainly African-American and black churches throughout the state of Oregon, but I've also spoken to organizations such as Alliance and the Lions organization in Memphis, Tennessee, the Kiwanis Club, on the issues of fairness and equity in the state of Oregon, why the Commission on Black Affairs and other commissions have not been funded. So while we have an audience that I deal with people who look mainly like me, our doors have never been closed to people who have called in and sought services. I think of the case of, I think it's the city of Gold Coast, and I'm sorry I don't have my notes right here with me, but the city of Gold Coast, who was involved in an interracial marriage where her son was experiencing some difficulty in the school system because of being a mixed child of a biracial parents, he was biracial, of white and a black parents. And he was experiencing some difficulties in school. Our commission was able to contact the principal of that school and let them know what was going on, because the parents were basically very afraid for their child and afraid for the situation we put their child in. And we got this family in contact with the State Department of Education, which got in contact with the U.S. Department of Education, in a very serious situation where the life of one young person was being made very difficult by a teacher who wasn't as sensitive as they could have been to the cultural background of this small child. Our commission was able to intervene for that family in a good way. And I can tell you today that that family is doing much better than this young person, even though they did have to leave school, and an official apology was issued to this family, that things are much better for that family. So there are many ways, and I could go on and on. I don't want to take up all your time this afternoon, but there are many ways the Commission on Black Affairs is there, and all of our commissions. I'm not just don't want to speak for the Commission on Black Affairs, but we're there representing African Americans and blacks here in the state of Oregon. We're only 1.6% of the state population. We work very closely with the commissions in the state of Washington, the Commission on African American Affairs, the Commission on Asian Affairs, the Commission on their Human Rights Commission, and all the commissions in the state of Washington, for we know that discrimination, issues of equity, issues of fairness are not determined by state boundaries, and we work on health and wellness issues also. One thing that we have sponsored with, in conjunction with several churches, is an annual health and wellness fair at various churches in the greater Portland area. We'd love to expand that to the cities of Salem and the cities of Eugene, but because of lack of funding, I'm doing most of this as a volunteer, and sometimes I paid a lot of those expenses out of my own pocket. It's not because I'm such a good person, but it's because I'm driven. I realize that it's organizations like the Commission on Black Affairs is the reason that I can walk in and do my job every day. I tell people that I feel very fortunate in being a commissioner on the Commission on Black Affairs. And I never underestimate that while I love this nation, while I love this state of Oregon, I've been a resident here for 12 years, that there are issues of fairness, there are issues of racism, there are issues of discrimination that still exist in 2005. And I think that it would be very valuable for the state of Oregon to have to support Senate Bill 359 and have the Oregon Advocacy Commission addressing the unique issues of Oregon's many Asian communities, Oregon's many African communities, it's the Latino Hispanic communities, and the women of this state of Oregon. So I'd like to encourage you to please support this bill, and please restore funding, not for me. And I say that because even if funding is restored, I will not benefit from this. I will not be returning as executive director, but not just for today, but for the future of the young people of the state of Oregon.
Thank you very much for a very good testimony. Any questions for Mr. Rice? Thanks. And I hope that your recovery is moving along as expected and will be complete and speedy.
Thank you so much, Madam Chairman. I'm doing fine. Still have some trouble with my voice, but I'm doing much better. Thank you so much. And thank you for being one of the original supporters of the Commission on Black Affairs. On our website, we have a Hall of Fame supporters, and I proudly say that your name is one of the Hall of Fame supporters.
Well, what a good comment right before we go to a vote. This guy's a politician. Yeah, well, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you.
We have pulled the sign-up sheets. I would invite anyone else who would like to
testify, to come forward, make yourself known to the chair so we can invite you up.
Madam Chair.
Senator Morrison.
There's just one more question to Ms. Suzuki. And I don't, you don't have to come up here necessarily. But yes, come up here. You represent the Asian community that includes Middle Eastern countries, which is significant in today's world. Do you represent the Muslim constituency? Do you have... I think that's... Well, go ahead.
Senator Morsett and members of the committee, yes, we do represent Muslim Americans in Oregon.
Well, I guess my thoughts are, I wonder if you should have a Asian/Middle East, if that would be more definitive. Maybe not, but I think there is a need in today's world to reach out to that particular population, many of whom feel more and more pressure upon themselves, like they're somehow the bad guy and they're really not. But I just, the Asian, I was kind of surprised, I guess. Maybe I already knew that it was Middle Eastern as well, but that is a very broad community, and I don't know if Middle Eastern is implied in Asian. I wouldn't have thought that it was, but I'm just trying to increase your workload. By
well, thank you, Senator.
Stop.
when the Senator Morrison and members of the commission, when the Commission on Asian Affairs was created in 1995, it was clear in the our state statutes that they would also include Middle Eastern Americans, and particularly following 9/11, we received calls basically about acts of intimidation, discrimination. The Commission on Asian Affairs joined its sister commissions in joining the, I believe it was at that time called the Hate Free Coalition, to sign a joint statement of support for Muslims living in Oregon. And so, you know, part of what we've been trying to do is educate people as to how diverse Asians are in Oregon and get the word out there that they are also included. And are
well, you ought to enlist the governor, Vicatia, to belong to your group because he is a Middle Eastern Syrian, I believe. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Suzuki.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask our professional legislative fiscal staff to go through the finer points of their recommendation, and then I'll entertain a motion that speaks to the amendments in the recommendation. I think I opened a work session and the public hearing, but just in case, we'll close the public hearing on SB 359A and we'll open a work session on SB 359A and ask Legislative Fiscal to go through the recommendation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would refer you to the memo that I've distributed titled LFO Recommendation, Oregon Advocacy Commission's Office, dated with today's date. This contains the LFO recommendations for action on Senate Bill 359. I will mention to you that the funding for the Advocacy Commission's office is included in the Senate Budget Chair's budget plan, so that funding of this office is consistent with that budget plan. In addition to the memo, you will see also a set of amendments, Senate Bill 359-A3 amendments, also with today's date. These amendments incorporate the LFO recommendations as changes into Senate Bill 359. And again, the main addition to these, the main elements of the amendments, as opposed to the bill that comes before you, A. Engrossed, is that they add the actual budget language into Senate Bill 359, and they make other changes that are related to finance. They don't change the portions of the bill that deal with the establishment of the office or the office's functions, but we do have some amendments here relating to financial financial situation. So if I may briefly, Madam Chair, go through this memo and remind you that the governor's budget, from which this memo is recommending changes to, would provide $375,000 in general fund to support two staff persons for the Oregon Advocacy Commission's office. There would also be four positions, two additional positions that would be approved. These would be the AmeriCorps employees that would be then transferred from the Commission for Women to the Oregon Advocacy Commission's office.
Mr. Bender, I don't know whether you know the answer to this or we'd have to ask Ms. Farrington. Is that agreeable under the terms and conditions of the AmeriCorps grant?
I'm sorry,
Mr. Bender's movement of the AmeriCorps employees that are currently working for the Oregon Commission on Women's Affairs, if they were moved to a new creation, this combined commission, is that acceptable under the terms and agreements of your contract with the federal government?
Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Yeah, why don't you come up, please?
Since this new office got proposed, we've been having that conversation with them, and we believe that it is workable and possible.
Thank you. Just don't want to get crosswise of the fence.
We do. Legislative Fiscal does, though, recommend a number of changes to the budget as was submitted or proposed initially by the governor, and those are identified in recommendations 1-6 of this memo. The first is actually something that is in the governor's budget, but because it's a package number above 100, I've indicated it, I've identified it separately here, but that would be to approve the policy package in the governor's proposal to extend the AmeriCorps grant, which would be to allow the expenditures from the Commission for Women's AmeriCorps grant for Communities in Partnership to Stop Violence Against Women and Children and employment of the personnel of the Commission for Women. We recommend approval of that recommendation. Other recommendations are within packages 801 and 802, our standard format this session for making recommendations to the governor's budget. Recommendation 2 is an adjustment for the PERS rate. You've seen this in every budget that's come before you, and we recommend a reduction of $1,370 general fund and $121 in other funds to reduce the amounts budgeted for PERS to the actual 14.63% rate. So that is our first recommended adjustment. We also have a recommended reduction of $2,099 in general fund to reflect reductions in state government service charges. Most of these state government service charges reductions are the result of the work of this subcommittee in reviewing the budgets of DAS and other assessing agencies. Typically, these types of reductions will be done in a reconciliation bill that has not been brought forward for your consideration yet. But the Advocacy Commission's office, since they are a new office that doesn't exist, they would not be in that bill, and therefore we recommend you make that adjustment here. Another change that we recommend from the governor's budget is to shift $24,440 in general fund to other funds. These are funds that are in the governor's budget to support the Commission for Women's Women of Achievement Dinner and the Commission on Asian Affairs celebrations of Asian Heritage Month. Both of these activities in the past have been funded by other funds, and we recommend continuing to fund them from other funds and thereby shifting the general fund appropriation of $24,440 to other funds. I would note also that the budget does not include general fund for specific celebrations of the Commission on Black Affairs and the Commission on Hispanic Affairs. It only included items for two of the four commissions. We do recommend that the general fund be removed in this case and that these activities be financed by other funds as they always have been. Recommendation number 5 relates to the fact that the budget as it was put together financed costs of the commissions for the full 24 months of the office, for the full 24 months of this biennium. But as you know, of course, this office will not be functioning in July, the current month, because this bill hasn't passed yet. Therefore, we're recommending that you reduce the funding to 23 months, because this is the maximum amount that the office will actually be in existence and expending monies. We calculate that to be equivalent to a reduction in general fund appropriation of an additional $13,888. Our sixth recommendation is to increase the other funds expenditure limitation. Other funds expenditures limitation is needed to allow the commission, the office, to raise the donations and grant funds that the commissions are raising. Without sufficient limitation, the funds that are being raised cannot be spent by the commissions or by the office. So the governor's budget actually does not come forward with sufficient expenditure limitation to allow the donations to be spent. I would view recommendation six really as being a technical adjustment or technical correction, and that would be to increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $76,224 so that these donation and grant revenues that are anticipated can actually be spent. This would leave a projected ending balance of $30,000 to carry forward into the next biennium. And although this is not really a part of the actions you are taking today, because in this bill you are only approving expenditures and not revenues, we do recommend that you would acknowledge an adjustment in the revenues to the budget that we would like to see put in there. That would be to eliminate some revenues that the governor's budget anticipated, which we really do not believe will be realized. These include $40,000 in charges for services that are in the governor's budget, and also $50,000 of the total that is in there for donations. These are the financial or budget recommendations, and if you approve all of them, the funding would be, as is shown on the table of page 2, this would leave remaining general fund of $333,203 and would other funds of $184,672. It would retain four positions being approved at 2.26 full-time equivalents. Our recommendation number 7 is not a direct budget recommendation, but it deals with performance measures. As you know, the legislature, the budget committees are approving agency performance measures for every agency. The Advocacy Commission's office is a new state agency that does not have performance measures. What we are recommending is that you direct the agency to develop and submit performance measures and targets for those measures to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee for approval no later than June 1, 2006. Our typical language, when we have the Joint Legislative Audit Committee review performance measures and approve them, is to have this done by August 1st, 2006. We recommend moving this up a bit because to let the new office know that the development of performance measures should be one of its first activities and thereby have an earlier report. Finally, we recommend approval of the Senate Bill 359-A3 amendments, which are before you today. What these amendments do are three things. First of all, they amend into the bill the budget language, which is to say the appropriation, general fund appropriation, and the other funds limitations that would be calculated upon approval of the other recommendations. So they do that. They also add language that was not in the bill as it's come to you to transfer the fund balances that the commissions have as of the effective date of this act to the new office account, which is established in the bill. So this will ensure that there are not funds out there that are not within the purview of this budget that you are approving here. And finally, the amendments remove some language which legislative, fiscal, and legislative counsel have been trying to get removed from various bills, which makes certain payments subject to the availability of funding. We recommend that you remove that language. That language really doesn't mean very much. It's very ambiguous as to what it means, as to what, in what circumstances funding would be available, considered to be available, and when it would not, and just to direct that certain costs can be paid. Obviously, if there are no funds available to pay them, they will not be paid, but in the Hand and Gross version of the amendments of the bill, which I've attached, you can see where that language is being eliminated. Additionally, the amendments will add an emergency clause to the bill to make it effective on passage. All budget bills are passed with emergency clauses so that they can be in effect for the biennium for which they are approved.
Any questions of Mr. Bender? Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it was stated earlier that House Bill 2013 has been kind of stuffed to coincide with the Senate version, so we are in sync.
I believe that House Bill 2113 is now in a committee that has been shut down, so that bill will not be moving forward. I'm not certain about that. The answer to your question is no.
Oh.
There has been no action similar to this taken on that particular bill.
I think that information, I thought from a representative, Tomei, who was here, who I thought said that.
I think she did say that. She left out the material fact stuck in a committee that is shut down. That was the piece that didn't get mentioned.
Okay. I think it's a good bill.
Any other questions? Senator Morris.
Madam Chair, a question to Steve. The performance measures, since this is not running as a special budget bill with our normal language and all that, how do we make sure that number 7 is carried forward?
The actions, if you approve the amendments and add actual appropriation language into the bill, we will create for you a budget report, as is created for every bill, whether it's a regular budget bill or a substantive bill, that has an appropriation or expenditure limitation in it. So there will be a budget report that will contain the same structure as other budget reports and include a section on performance measures and direction to the agency.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I would endorse this bill. One of the most difficult things will be to develop performance measures, because part of these agencies' task is to change the hearts and minds of Oregonians, and some of that activity is hard to measure. With respect to specific goals and accomplishments, I would put a lot of emphasis on developing performance measurements that actually do reflect accomplishments and not just
output.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I would speak in favor of this bill.
Okay. Senator Morissette.
Yeah. I was going to mention or ask about performance measures. The agency, this is, we're talking about a single advocacy commission. We're not talking about the subgroups within. Or are we talking about the Asian commission making performance measures? I don't understand the performance measure bit.
Four
groups that would have to make performance
measures. Mr. Bender, you want to give us some definitive guidance here?
I had in mind that the office would be making these. You would be developing performance measures for the office, because the office is being created in this bill, and the office would be receiving funding in this bill. Quite frankly, I did not consider the particular issue that I think you're addressing here, and if you do have specific direction for the office that you'd like placed in your budget report, we would be happy to do that. But this is just a directive that the office come forward with performance measures that the Joint Legislative Audit Committee would then have the option to review and approve, and I'm not sure how the office would choose to do this, whether they would choose to look at separate performance measures for each of the commissions that it administers, or whether it would choose to do some type of thing that would be more.
Follow up, Senator Morsette.
Well, one of the major criticisms of some of the commissions is that they haven't had a very good job in getting the word out and selling themselves. That has been a major criticism over the years. I, however, would not saddle commissions that are barely functioning with necessarily coming up with something that they couldn't live up to. And I think we have to be very careful how we do this performance measure thing. I would, I think, rather deal with the commission itself than each subgroup of it. But that's...
Senator Morrison.
Madam Chair, maybe language to the effect that the performance measures would reflect the uniqueness of each of the four commissions. And if we can't reflect their uniqueness, then we probably don't need four commissions.
I would agree with that. I would hate to lose the unique character of each one of the commissions, speaking to a different constituency and providing a different body of information to the legislature. However, I could definitely see some value in having those presentation materials arrive at the legislative doorstep at the beginning of the session. I'm not saying this very artfully, but one of the things that I would hope would be reflected in the performance measures of all of the advocacy agencies is their contact in providing the status of the constituencies that they serve to the legislature, so that almost like a demographic report that we've envisioned in another piece of substantive legislation against which decisions could be made, that the advocacy groups would present information about their activities or about the constituencies that they serve at the beginning of the legislative session to help inform deliberations as the session moves on. I'm hoping, and what I'm saying very awkwardly, is that there would be some common reporting of all of the advocacy agencies, but I don't want it the back room performance measures. I want it something about over the front counter, to further beat up the analogy that I've used, talking about how many folks were actually served, what the scope of the service of the commissions was. So I think we want to get the flavor of what the commissions are actually doing and the people that they're serving rather than the output of the back office, although that back office functioning well is important to the survival and success of the commissions.
Madam Chair.
Senator Morsette.
I guess I would go back to the point that I made about some of the commissions not doing a very good job in stating what their mission is and getting the support and advocacy for their group. I seem to remember that as being one of the criticisms of some of the commissions. Now, again, I don't want to overburden them, but to do more than just say what they're doing, I would like to see some movement toward some measurable achievements, at least start to measure what their goals are, what their mission statement talks about, in baby steps to start with. Because in the case of the Hispanic Commission, there is no Hispanic Commission. There are spots around the state, and to draw something together, that would be the goal of the commission. The Hispanic Commission is to create a statewide goal again. I think in terms of fundraising, that would be an interesting performance measure in terms of events, but it's a big step to take, and so I would not expect too much, but I think it has to be something that is measurable, as all performance measures are.
I think the fundraising measure is an important one, and it's one we've discussed in this committee previously. Including a recognition that there's an impediment to raising funds in some of the constituencies served, given both capacity and inclination and understanding of the work of the commissions. Again, I would call out Ms. Farrington's work on educating the women of the state of Oregon with respect to a pretty aggressive fundraising drive and fundraising goals that are achievable. This isn't asking Oregon women to step up to support the commission by buying a $1,000 table somewhere. It really is a pretty modest threshold contribution to validate the work of the commission. So somewhere fundraising is a demonstration of the constituency serves recognition of the value of the work of the commissions, I think, is not burdensome. Although at this moment I might invite a comment from Ms. Suzuki whether or not fundraising is the kind of performance measure that you could responsibly include. Bardo, I would welcome a comment from you about fundraising too. I think it would be wrong for this committee to build into performance, and if you'd like to come up, I'd invite you to come up, to build into performance measures an expectation of fundraising when that's simply not achievable. Rosalind, you got a track record, so you don't get to come up.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think it is a reasonable performance measure, provided that the members of the legislature understand that there have not been appointments, for example, to my commission since 2002, and there are, and it's going to take a massive effort to get back on our feet, because everything that we have is boxed up in a DAS warehouse. I have one laptop in my checked out to do that. It'll be, in most cases, for the minority commissions, starting from scratch. And so I think that it has been an expectation of the legislature that these commissions do some fundraising of their own. I think once we get our feet underneath us and everything a little bit more organized, I think that's doable, certainly by, you know, June 1st of 2006. I also wanted to comment on two things, if I might. The first thing is regarding number four of Mr. Bender's report. Because of the loss in funding over the last two legislative sessions, I've introduced and passed two bills. The first one in 2003 removed the requirement that the Commission on Asian Affairs host the Asian Heritage Month celebration. In our statutes, when our commission was first created, it was written in statute that not only would we put together a celebration, but that it would be the fourth week during the month of May, which of course is Memorial Day weekend, and we would have dismal attendance. And so, you know, out of all the commissions, we were the only one that were required in statute to have this commission, this celebration, and on a specific.
Did he tell you what the menu should be and what?
No, we didn't go that far, but just about.
Just checking.
So I removed that, and then in this session with Senate Bill 856, I brought the commission statutes more in line with the other commissions, and that also removed a requirement that we hold an Asian Heritage celebration. So what's happened, because we ceased to function in many ways, is that the community stepped up, and there is the Asian Reporter newspaper put together this year an Asian Heritage Festival celebration a little bit earlier, and I think it's now being held at the Oregon Convention Center. The other thing I wanted to bring your attention to is that none of the commissions, except for the Commission for Women, I believe, was included in the continuing resolution. So, for example, due to some fundraising of our own, as well as the sale of our furniture from the closure of our offices, I believe Commission on Asian Affairs has $3,500 in their personal account, if you will, their agency account. Those funds are effectively frozen, and I don't believe that they are accessible, period, if, for example, this bill doesn't pass. So I just wanted to...
Can you enlighten the committee?
This is the first I had heard of that. I do not know why the continuing resolution would have excluded the Commission on Asian Affairs, because you were... Although you didn't get general fund last session, you did have a budget bill passed that gave you an other funds expenditure limitation. So I'm sorry, I don't understand why the continuing resolution did not apply to your agency.
And what will happen with those funds is, let's say if this bill doesn't pass, is that the Commission on Asian Affairs will incur a fee of $10 per month from state of, for the Treasury. It's a standard fee that all the agencies pay, and you know it'll be $10 a month. And I don't know if there are any other charges that would be taken out, but in a, basically, then it would for that biennium continue to be to lose $10 a month rather than just you know frozen.
In state agency service charges, they just would nick that out of it every month.
Yeah, okay. And I just wanted the committee to be aware of that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, when we did the 2000 Youth Summit and the previous Youth Summits for the Oregon Commission on Hispanic Affairs, we did them all through fundraising. The 2 days of the last summit that took place at University of Oregon, it was completely free of charge for all the students that came from all around the state of Oregon. But I want to caution you regarding putting any provision regarding fundraising at this time. I think that I will support what Carl has mentioned regarding not setting them up for failure. I think that when I was volunteering at the office, the mailing was so overwhelming. The requests are so overwhelming just to try to advocate, to try to help, to try to put packages together for the legislature, information, reports, that, believe me, Rosalind can testify to this. Having the provision of responding for fundraising at the beginning, I think you will be setting the commissions for failure. I think that they do need to get, some tracking. And maybe at the next legislative session, maybe that will be something to consider. But I really caution you on that. It's a lot of work that this executive director is going to have to be doing, and we need to man it. We need to put the commissioners back in working order.
Senator Morrison.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. How about if we just say that you will, your performance measure is that you will address fundraising and come back at the next legislative session with some options that you can present to
plans,
us for fundraising.
Yes.
Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If we set a spending limitation of other funds, it doesn't mean that they have to go raise that money. It means that if they do raise it, you do have the authority to execute. So it's very permissive. It's not mandatory, the way I would understand what your recommendation is, Steve.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ronald.
Okay. I think that was helpful discussion, and I know Steve has captured some of those issues. There's none of the issues that have been raised would prohibit us from going ahead and acting on the LFO recommendation as it sits, and so the chair would entertain a motion to accept the LFO recommendation. Senator Morris moves the LFO recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. The chair would now entertain a motion to adopt the dash A3 amendments. Senator Morris moves the dash A3 amendments. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. The chair would now entertain a motion to move Senate Bill 359A to the full Senate Special Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation. Pardon me?
Due pass as amended.
Due pass as amended. Senate Bill 359A with a due pass recommendation. Senator Morris moves the Senate Bill 359A as amended to the Senate Special Committee on Budget. Any discussion? With a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. We need a volunteer to carry it.
I would love to carry it.
Senator Morissette requests the privilege of carrying it.
It's a privilege. I would love to do it.
And
it's the full budget, and then it goes to the
then
floor.
Then it goes to the floor.
Would you like to carry it to the floor?
On the floor. Yes, okay. On the
we'll split
budget.
The difference. Okay. Senator Morris
yeah,
to the full budget,
yeah,
Senator
yeah,
Morissette on the floor.
No, I would not touch the pulpit. You do that. You're on the committee and I'm not.
Noting that Senator Morissette wouldn't touch the special. All right. With that, we are going to close the work session on Senate Bill 359A. Is there any other issues, Mr. Bender, to bring before the committee?
No.
Any comments from the committee?
Yes. This has been one of the most interesting committee meetings that I've sat in.
Thank you. Yeah. Any other comments? With that, we are adjourned.